we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a report from the Derbyshire Times, read by Harriet Cass.
Burglars attacked fruit machines and stole cash from behind the bar of a club in Matlock. The incident in Edgefield Club was reported to the police at 6:53 a.m. on July the 5th. It's believed the culprits entered the building through a door.
Thanks to Liz Presky for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Jeremy Hardy. And opposite them on my left, Andy Hamilton and Fred McCauley. Francis, have a listen to this.
You say either, and I say either. You say neither, and I say neither. Either, either, neither, neither. Let's call the whole thing off. You like potato, and I like patata. You like tomato, and I like tomato. Potato, patata, tomato, tomato. Let's call the whole thing off.
So, Frankie, whose transatlantic tongue has got him into a whole lot of trouble?
You what?
It's old brown tongue.
Is it old brown tongue?
Mm-hmm.
He's not in a whole heap of trouble, is he?
I can't believe that anyone in America managed to stay awake through his speech for long enough to be annoyed.
He's been accused of plagiarism because he said things like, ask not what Britain can do for you, but what you can do for Britain.
Ich bin ein Pfeifer.
Yeah, and as from this moment, we are at war with Vietnam. All his speeches are full of plagiarised American things, aren't they?
But they were written by the same man, so he's plagiarising himself. There's this guy who wrote speeches for Clinton and Gore and all that lot, and he now does them for Gordon, so it's perfectly legit.
What you're saying is a sort of environmental speech writing. You recycle things that Clinton once said.
Yeah, well, of course, I mean, Jeremy would never stoop so low as to recycle a gag he'd ever used once before to Senate, but...
Oh, you bitch!
Now, boys...
Well, it was tremendously exciting, wasn't it? The Labour Party conference, bloody hell. The whole week of non-stop speeches from Alistair Darling. That was good. And, I don't know, John Hutton. I don't even know what they're called, most of these people.
I was on the edge of my consciousness.
the dear old Ed Balls. Things have come to pretty much... Well, the liveliest speech of the week comes from Ed Balls. Because he was asked about Gordon and the election, and he said, I think his priority for now is that Britain knows that his priority is to deliver on their priorities.
Brings tears to your eyes, doesn't it?
And then there was, and then Gordon made a four-hour speech all about positive initiatives. So awfully good, much better than the negative sort. And all about the sermons. He recycled all his father's old sermons as well. You must be a giver as well as a getter. Many a mickle makes a muckle. That's a thing.
He said Britain 483,000 times in the course. He kept saying Britain, Britain, Britain. I thought, is this his way of saying, I know where you live? He's done quite well to enshrine himself, because he's only had a few short months since the surprising and sudden resignation of popular war hero Tony Blair. And so they sort of turned the whole conference into this affirmation to try and convince us that he really is the Prime Minister and not an acting Prime. And he's just like, he's had breast implants. Yeah. They've put a new head on him. And Thatcher's spin doctors have been digitally altering photographs so you can now see him shaking hands with Pinochet.
It was quite interesting as well. There's always controversy about him inviting Thatcher round to number 10 Downing Street. And a lot of people said that was a cheap trick and everything, and rather cynical. And it is possible, of course, that he invited the old girl back to number 10 Downing Street just to taunt her. Because they had tea in the Thatcher room. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to imagine that he sat her down and it's been completely redecorated with portraits of Arthur Scargill. And...
She's being rehabilitated. It's scary because I was actually asked to go on the ITN pre-recorded obituary to Lady Thatcher. And I turned it down because I couldn't think of anything nice to say. But I did think I would quite like to meet Thatcher because then I could say, oh, I was just talking about you.
When we were writing Drop the Dead Donkey, me and my friend Guy did a little bit of research at BBC News, and we were being shown around the obituary section. You know, they got them ready for when someone croaks. And we saw Thatcher's there, and we said, oh, can we watch it? And they said, no, we've told people they've got to stop watching Mrs. Thatcher's obituary because we were losing too many man hours.
the tape's worn out.
Yeah.
We're all grainy by the time it gets broadcast.
I do worry about the Thatcher Brown thing. I mean, if he gets any closer to her, he'll get blue tongue. Now, there are claims that Gordon Brown's Bournemouth conference speech this week was rehashed from speeches made by Al Gore and Bill Clinton. Apparently what gave it away was Gordon starting his speech with, "My fellow Americans." 2 points to Francis. Jeremy, why might it soon be easier to protect your straw house from a big bad wolf?
Jack Straw, who is Justice Minister, it says he keeps saying in the papers that it is to enable homeowners to tackle burglars, but nothing about people in rented accommodation. Unless you've got a mortgage, you're unable to defend yourself. You have to ring the council and ask if they could send somebody a week on Thursday. But yeah, this is all Jack Straw's sort of new vigilantism. Because he's famous for tackling. He just leaps in and rescues people. He nips into a phone box and he changes into the outfit of somebody who cares about other people.
Some of this crime stuff's going, because Home Secretary Jackie Smith, she's announced this £10 million fund for this new crime-fighting technology. There's going to be something called a weapon detection wand. Now, I think this is delightfully camp. The whole government's becoming slightly camp. I loved it the other morning. I heard John Humphrey say, "Alistair, darling," and I just thought, well...
This is about people being able to take the law into their own hands. And in Scotland, just 3 months ago, we had our very own Have a Go hero, who was down at Bournemouth, John Smito Smeaton, the airport baggage handler, who got stuck into the alleged terrorist when he was dragged out of the Jeep, 90% aflame. And I've often wondered why this Have a Go hero baggage handler would be at the front of the airport.
It's all
skiving. He was doing it. I think the real heroes are the baggage handlers who were around the back of the airport handling baggage.
It's reasonable force, isn't it? Which I think is a lovely thing. There's nowhere in the law does it allow for panic. Because if someone's coming through your front door, I'll be honest, I would probably try and find a sledgehammer and decide whether that was reasonable afterwards.
Because he says he wants just to make the law encourage people to have a go, which I think is a very sweet phrase, isn't it? I mean, it's they might be killed, but it's not the winning that counts, it's having a go.
I suspect the reason people don't try and tackle violent criminals is A, that they're violent, and B, that they're criminals, and C, that they're armed. I'm just not going to go up to the local youth and say, "Don't be a fool, can't you see you'll never get away with this? Now give me the gun."
The advice was to run away.
It is.
Yeah, good. Well, I'll be sticking with that.
Jack Straw has announced plans to strengthen the law on self-defence to improve the rights of have-a-go heroes. And I think Jack Straw clearly believes what he says. He's widely seen as a conviction politician. Unlike Geoffrey Archer, of course, who's just a convicted politician. Fred, 2 points to Jeremy. Fred, which petty dictator had a gay old time this week?
It was Mahmoud Ahmadinejad.
Yep.
Who was over speaking to the Americans and saying that there were no gays in Iran. And people wondered why he was there. And I think it's pretty much the same reason as Thatcher was at number 10. It was to make Bush look good. Thatcher went to number 10. Gordon comes out smelling of roses. He goes over to the United States. People think, well, Bush maybe isn't so bad after all. And he's just the first of a string of leaders that are going over there. Mugabe will be over there. Burmese leader, he'll be there. They might even get Thatcher over. You never know.
An extraordinary speech, actually. He said there are no homosexuals in Iran, as we don't have that phenomenon.
Which is very odd, because actually within 6 months of becoming president, he'd executed quite a few of them.
Well, that's why they don't have that phenomenon.
But he must have got an American visa, presumably, because he wasn't just going to the UN, he went to Columbia University and things, so he must have actually gone through that process of filling in all those forms. Do you intend, while in the United States, to overthrow the US government by violent means? Claude Coburn, the old left-wing journalist, when he filled in his visa form, wrote, "Sole purpose of visit."
You'd be surprised how many terrorists have been caught out like that. Yeah. You have to tick a thing saying that you weren't involved in the Holocaust. You have no culpability in the Holocaust, which he was able to tick, because he says, of course I wasn't involved in it, because it didn't happen.
But he also said that they respect their women more when he was challenged about women's rights and why there were no women lawyers in Iran. He said, no, we respect our women so much that we don't like to burden them with legal matters. It's very gallant, isn't it?
Bless.
You know.
Don't you worry your fluffy head about what to wear, my dear. Simply put this on.
There, you're invisible.
This is Iranian President Mahmoud you say it, Harriet.
Mahmoud Ahmadinejad.
You're worth every penny. His visit to the UN in New York, which also saw him accept an invitation to speak at Columbia University, where he received, frankly, a hostile reception. Indeed, American newspaper headlines about the visit included "The Evil Has Landed," "Guest of Dishonor," and "Go to Hell," headlines not seen since Anne Robinson's last visit. 2 points to Fred. Andy, which Bullingdon in a china shop wants the London vote?
Boris Johnson is standing for mayor against Ken Livingstone, and that great debate will start as to whether Boris is a fantastically clever man who chooses to play the role of a bumbling idiot, or whether he's a bumbling idiot not playing the role of a bumbling idiot. And the jury's still out on that one, as far as I'm concerned. But he's got some quite novel ideas. I mean, crime, and this is one of his ideas, is to leave bikes lying around for bike thieves. I quite like going down that road.
So that's entrapment.
It is entrapment, which is, technically speaking, you can't do
can't
that.
Do it, yeah,
but this, yeah, is, but a, this is Boris, isn't
this
it?
This is a man,
he,
Andy,
he
though,
lives
that
in
has
Boris
had,
world.
He's had 7 bicycles stolen in 7 years. Now, would you vote for somebody who didn't have the sense to buy a padlock? You just think.
He also, I don't know if anyone's going to pick up on this, he also, in the Telegraph on Thursday, a day or so ago, he's joined this big thing saying we ought to have parades for our troops, you know. And he said, there's a sentimental nation in which people are more concerned over the disappearance of a four-year-old child than over the fate of our soldiers. And you think, well, in fairness, Boris, she didn't volunteer. So I do hope someone picks up on that. He's not going to win, is he?
Well, apparently the Tories reckon he'll win because he's a household name. And you think, well, yeah, but I mean, Sillit Bang would do a better job.
He's meant to be quite attractive to women.
Yeah, but Sillit Bang is supposed to remove all stain.
Boris Johnson, MP. Yes, he really is. Has been selected by the Conservatives via a phone vote to be their candidate in the London mayoral elections next May.
Did they really, or did they want a cat called Socks? Well,
at the end of round one, the scores are Francis and Jeremy have got 4, and so have Andy and Fred. We start round two with a cutting from the BBC News website.
The government is expected to announce on Monday that it is rejecting calls to stop building on floodplains, despite the recent extensive flooding. A spokesman for the Department of Communities and Local Government said, "We don't comment on leaks."
And our thanks to Peter Manulescu for spotting that. Jeremy, have a listen to this.
You ain't my real mother!
Okay.
Who found watching daytime TV too grisly to bear?
Oh, it was a judge. They were defending somebody. This guy had headbutted somebody on the Jeremy Kyle show, but sadly not Jeremy Kyle. If you ever watched it, I've been staying in hotels a lot because I've been travelling around doing live shows.
And she's thrown you out, be honest.
Shut up.
Don't hide.
It's just a temporary thing. In the morning, on one of the independent channels, I think, don't think Trisha, think downwards from Trisha. Okay. It's like a sort of stage production of a Deliverance.
Is violence, doesn't he? I mean, it's a sort
not
of...
Not strict... Well, he's well, probably he's... got lawyers. No, he's a very highly qualified. He's a good doctor of mentalology at the University of Made-Up Illinois. And, he's probably Dr. Jeremy Kyle in that Colonel Sanders way.
What I didn't understand was that the judge in this case, the man was found guilty of assault, but the judge sort of gave him a light sentence because he said he thought the producers of the TV programme should be in the dock for producing what he called human bear baiting.
I'd say it's more like cockfighting, because there's fighting and there's Jeremy Kyle.
Actually, the judge went on to say that the programme is a morbid and depressing display of dysfunctional people.
Oh, that was the news quiz, I think, wasn't it?
Oh, sorry, yes. Sorry, it's a different Radio Times listing. I apologise. Judge Alan Berg described ITV's Jeremy Kyle show as human bear baiting after imposing a £300 fine on a gentleman called David Staniforth, who headbutted his wife's lover on the show. It is not the first time violence has erupted on the show. One guest once threw a chair at Jeremy Kyle, although you'll be pleased to know the chair later made a full recovery. Right, so that was 2 points to Francis. Now, oh dear, Fred. We've got a question about fat Scottish people. There's bound to be letters of complaint.
I'm writing one as we speak. Dear
Fred,
Radio 4.
Is that a deep-fried Mars bar in your pocket, or are you just pleased to see me?
Can't we talk about the Scottish football team being above Italy and France in the European Championship?
No, on the grounds that we don't care.
Well, we don't care. This could only be more offensive to us if Brian Sewell was here. It's more, it's human bear baiting again, isn't it? Just something like, okay, we've got a few larvae people. Well, it's a fact from 2003, Francis, which said that we were second behind the Americans. And I've got to say, in Scotland, it doesn't matter whether it's football or heart disease or obesity. If we're up near the top, we're jolly pleased.
Did you say it like it was in the past? You're saying in the last 4 years, everybody in Scotland has joined
trim
the gym.
Trim and fit.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it was to do with people being admitted to hospital for cardiac problems brought about by blood pressure, brought about by obesity, which is rubbish. Blood pressure is high in Scotland because we bottle things up. We bottle whiskey, water and things! What are you doing, Davey? I'm bottling things up! Stand back, I'm going to blow!
So are you saying that, for example, tossing the caber has now been made healthier by tossing it in extra virgin olive oil? Is that the same?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that we're going to topple the Americans off the top of that chart. We're going to deep fry some Mars bars and give them a good run, a pathetic run for their money. A fast waddle is what we'll give them.
What I didn't understand was the fattest people live in the Western Isles, according to this survey. Uh-huh. But why, if you lived in somewhere
they
like the Western
off.
Isles...
Well, they can't get off the Isles. Caledonian McBrains turn up and they go, no, I don't think so, mate.
In fact, they've had to reclassify some of the islands. They found out they were, in fact, large crofters who'd fallen off on their way to the pub.
But it's full of mountains and things. Surely that would keep you fit and lean, wouldn't it?
Hey,
I'm naive, aren't I, Fred?
Yes. Have you never heard of going round the mountain? She'll be coming round the mountain. Good, I hope she's brought chips.
You tap the high road and I'll just sit here and wait for you.
Well, it seems that Scotland, and what a shock this was to us all, has the second highest level of obesity in the developing world. And that's developing as in, I see you're developing quite a gut there, Morag. So 2 points to Fred, and at the end of round two, Andy and Fred have got 10 points, but Francis and Jeremy have leapt into the lead with 13. Before we start round three, here is a cutting from the Times.
Derbyshire police have apologised after they sent six-year-old Peter Akers one of a batch of letters giving known criminals one last chance to hand themselves in. It offered him a fresh start if he confessed to his crimes. Peter said that he had recently taken some sweets from his sister's room.
Thanks to everybody who sent that in.
Let's just hope Jack Straw kicks the living shite out of him.
Francis, which resort is virtually perfect?
Oh, it's that Cornish place called Pen Wallop or Wellith or...
Porthhemmet.
Lost wherewithal.
Or Tresoggit. And it's some graduate, and he created a spoof website about this Cornish resort where you can sunbathe nude and surf all through the winter, and it's got a Mediterranean climate. Nobody's actually attempted to go there. I think he just planted this story itself. He said he'd had 6,000 hits on this website, which I don't think is an awful lot, is it, these days?
Well, apparently everybody loved the descriptions of warm seas and dolphins and a coral reef, and they only became suspicious when the website began boasting about friendly locals.
What was the derogatory term? Emmet?
Emmet.
What does it mean?
It means tourists.
Tourists.
Actually, I thought tourists was a derogatory term for tourists, but...
The thing is, I spent a very happy 2 weeks in Cornwall earlier this year, but there is nothing to do. There is absolutely no work. And since the old mackerel mines closed...
There's no work for you.
No, I did a gig there. I mean, that's why they do surfing. It's like, there's so little to do that their main hobby is trying to stand on the sea.
It's an age-old trick to misdirect tourists, isn't it?
As I was
saying to some Americans when I sent them up Glen Arshole to Strathnumpty.
Porth Emmet, a beach in Cornwall described as an unspoiled paradise, has been revealed to be an internet hoax. Cornwall is, of course, famous for its hoaxes. Extraordinary, believe it or not, there's a man who calls himself the Duke of Cornwall and claims that he owns most of the county.
She's in Madame Tussauds now, the Duchess, did you see?
I thought she looked rather better.
She looks exactly like Rick Parfitt of Status Quo. It's quite uncanny.
2 points to Francis. Fred, as I've got all boys with me today on the panel, own up, which of you is very clever and which of you is very stupid?
It was...
The cleverest people are mostly men, but then the stupidest people are mostly men. And women are sort of in the middle, because they don't need to be that clever to get a man.
They're in the middle dancing around their handbags.
Yeah, we're all saying this much too fast for Sandy to follow.
Sorry.
In the top 2% of intelligent human beings, there are more men than women, according to this survey, a team of male scientists. But there are more men in the bottom 2%, the most stupid.
It was an all-male research team who tested men and women on neutral topics, such as to name the 1968 Manchester United European Cup winning squad.
But there was also another made-up survey this week, wasn't there, showing that women are unhappier than men now, whereas 40 years ago, men were unhappier than women. The theory is that men in recent years have learned to work less and relax more. And the trouble is that women then have to fill the shortfall and they're rushed off their feet.
We've taken up the slack, is what you're saying, Francis. Absolutely.
Multitasking.
But the survey about the intelligence thing said that it's an evolutionary thing. Women don't need to be intelligent, it said. I'm really taking my life in my hands here, Fred. I got booed last time. What it said, the research, was that in evolutionary terms, women don't need to be clever. Don't look at me like that, Sandy. I'm just saying what they
Andy,
said.
Andy, your wife's in the audience.
I know.
You're going to be buying a
she's
lot
fine.
Of shoes
she's,
in the next
she's
coming
a very,
years.
Very bright woman in the 2%. Women don't need to be clever because in evolutionary terms, they just need to be kind of
available,
pretty and ornamental, you know, and that's...
Sorry,
I mean,
could you explain it again? My psychologist at Edinburgh University has found that there are twice as many men as women in the brightest 2% of the population and also in the least intelligent 2%, thus proving that men are either very bright or very stupid. In other words, if Carol Vorderman had a brother, he'd either be Einstein or Wayne Rooney. Andy, have a listen to this. See you later, alligator. Who doesn't snap when asked for directions?
This is research by some other scientists.
Australians.
There are crocodiles in Australia that are a problem living close to people in that they try and eat them. So what they've got is a policy of rehousing the crocodile. They'll take this big saltwater crocodile and they'll transport it hundreds of miles and they'll drop it in the middle of the outback somewhere. But they've discovered that the crocodiles are hugely intelligent, not as intelligent as women or Scottish people, and the crocodiles invariably find their way back because they've got sat-nav. Inside the crocodile's brain, there is a little voice going, turn left at the next billabong.
It depends on the sex of the crocodile, because apparently the females have a sort of inbuilt sat-nav. They use the sun and magnetic fields and sight and smell and so on. And the male crocodiles use something called a hunch.
How far did the crocodiles travel from where they'd been rehoused?
About 500 miles, I think. And some swim out to sea, and if that's a quicker way, they'll go out to sea and swim round.
But this is because they have these navigational skills, because it's claimed that crocodiles are more closely related to birds than to any reptiles.
Yeah, they hatch out of eggs, don't they?
They're sort of birds,
Yeah, but
basically.
Birds still aren't as clever as men, though.
Thanks.
So you could have a whole new sport, couldn't you? You could have homing crocs.
Imagine all his husbands in Yorkshire going, I'm giving up pigeons. Wait till you see what I've got coming anyway, but the bathroom's going to be out of use for a while.
They're not the same as alligators. That musical clue was wrong. They're different.
Extra point there to Jeremy.
Because the alligator is a fish, whereas the crocodile is a mollusk.
Stop now, because you're boring everybody. Australian scientists have discovered that crocodiles have a form of built-in sat-nav, which is why lethal reptiles that have been dumped in the wilderness keep returning to their old homes, which does at least explain what Thatcher was doing at number 10 last week. reveal the final scores. Let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Mr. Ween.
This is from Mr. K.C. Mellor in Corsham, Wiltshire, where they've just elected a BNP councillor, and there's a report in the local paper of him taking his seat. And a quote from him where he tries to reassure people. He says, "The BNP is a party for indigenous British people. Everyone goes on about us being anti-black. But it's not just blacks who cannot join. Asians, Chinese, Aborigines, Maoris and Eskimos can't join either. But you don't hear them complaining."
Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by a man called Derek Cunningham, and it's from the Fosway magazine. And this is from the announcements. It says, "The Mendip Ramblers meet at 10 a.m. for a long walk in the car park on the east side of the A36.
Fred, you trim lad.
This is from the Peebleshire News. An unemployed youth was arrested and found guilty of stealing a plumber's van, claiming he just simply couldn't resist it. He was fined for the theft of the van and also for driving the van without an MOT.
Andy.
Jenny Brown, 62, entered her Victoria Sponge into a cake competition and was initially pleased to have come second. But she was left shocked when a friend revealed to her that she was the only person to take part. The contest was organised by the Wimblington Sports Committee and judges marked down the cake because it had indentations from a wire rack. Mrs. Brown said, "My friend came over to me at the fete and said I'd come second. I asked her how many more entries there'd been, but she just started laughing." Julie Dent from the Wimblington Sports Committee said, "The judges had an expectation and I suppose they didn't feel as though it qualified for first place." She said her own baking was subject to another strange decision. She said, "About 11 years ago, I entered a show with some fruit scones. I was the only entrant, but I came third."
Now let's take a look at the final score. Andy and Fred have got 14 points, but this week's runaway winners with 18 points are Francis and Jeremy. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Carlisle News and Star sent in by Daniel Bates.
Appleby Horse Fair organisers have hailed this year's event as one of the best ever, despite 58 people being arrested and a horse drowning on the first day.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Ween, Jeremy Hardy, Fred McCauley and Andy Hamilton. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig and the news was read by me, Harriet Kess. The chair's script was written by Lucy Clark, Roderick Crooks and Simon Littlefield, with additional material by Danielle Ward and Stephen Carlin. The producer was Ed Morrish.